This is the news, according to me, at Christmas time. Well, Merry Christmas, everyone. I assume this is after Christmas. This podcast is coming to you after Christmas. A lot of things happening. So, I just couldn't put off doing a show, doing another podcast until Monday. I was going to try to take off the entire weekend. Not going to work. There's just too much going on. So welcome aboard. This is the ad-free, raw, recorded live. No edits. No phony business. Just the news according to me, because that's the name of the show. So that's what I have to do. I have to tell you my thoughts and my opinions on the news, because you can't talk back. I don't have a way to... for people to call in yet. That's coming, though. We're going to start having some live shows next year, beginning of the top of the year. Not a year from now, but beginning of January. That's the plan. Probably the first week in January, possibly, hopefully before that, before the January 6th. I meant before January 6th, not before January, because that's now. So we're going to try to do that. This coming week, though, the week between Christmas and New Year's, we're going to have a very special guest on, and a fellow who's going to be coming to the studio here, and we'll have a chat. You actually hear two people's opinions about the news and get to hear us argue about things. We don't argue much, but yeah. So that's coming up this week. We'll have a show that probably at least one where we have thoughts and opinions about some specific events. Big deal coming up on January 9th. Just yesterday, I think it was yesterday or day, let's see, yesterday was Christmas. So it was the day before that. On Thursday, late afternoon, evening, I started hearing these reports that Rudy Giuliani says that right after Christmas, there's going to be some big stuff come out. It's really going to blow up after Christmas. I don't think he was talking about the explosion in Nashville. I don't think anybody's used those terms if he would have known that was going to happen. So I'm expecting on Monday. I'm expecting some things on Monday. I'm not expecting a lot, and I'll get more into that later. The Nashville bombing, we're going to talk about that quite a bit. This is going to be a long podcast because there are a lot of things I need to really cover, and there's just a lot going on. A lot of things happening, a lot of things bubbling to the surface. So I'm going to talk about a lot of things. The stimulus bill, what's going on with that? The issues between, arguing between the Senate and the House, and then you got arguments between the Republicans and the Democrats and what all they knew. And of course, you've got then the president throwing his thing in there with wanting $2,000 for everybody. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit. A little theory I've got about that whole stimulus / COVID relief thing. I've got some theories about some of the places where that money's going, but it's more of a speculation thing. But that's what I do here. I give you my speculation, because this is the news according to my speculation. So Sidney Powell is also in the news a little bit about the whole thing with her being a special counsel. There's a whole big bunch of frolic going on with that. We'll talk about that a little bit. The Insurrection Act, is it still in play? What's going on with that? There's a lot of stuff out there. The Amistad Project with Phil Klein, that is a big deal. That's a big deal. What they're doing is probably bigger than what, in my opinion, probably more successful and actually more pertinent than what Sidney Powell and Giuliani are doing, in my opinion. But that's just my opinion. And Lynn Wood. I don't know. Lynn, not sure what to think about Lynn Wood. I like the guy, sort of. I like the fact that he speaks his mind, but yeah, we'll talk about that. January 6th Congress, we'll talk about it. I've already mentioned that a little bit, but what it's shaping into, what it's turning into, all the different facets and what Mitch McConnell might be up to, he's been very quiet about this whole thing. So, I mean, he has made some comments, but I really wonder kind of what his plan is in the background. I have the feeling he could spring something on us that would just probably throw everybody for a loop. But we'll talk about that. So let's get into it. Very first thing is we have the Nashville bombing. It happened yesterday morning. Here are my thoughts on the whole thing. Here's what I think happened. First of all, let me just talk about that. Somebody, for whatever reason, whatever twisted reason this whole thing took place, decided that they were going to blow this car up, or this RV, this Class C RV, in a certain place in Nashville. I've been to Nashville. I know the area where they're talking about. It's right real close to Painter's Alley right there. I know that Nashville, for the most part, Tennessee in general, is a very conservative state, considered a red state, basically, in general. Now, I know that Nashville and some parts of it, especially because of the artsy-fartsy crowd that's there, there are pockets of extreme liberals there as well. When I heard about the explosion, my first thought was, of course, oh boy, somebody's probably, you know, some radical on the left or the right has done something. And my concern was that it was somebody on the right. This guy, oh great, some Trump supporter did something down there. And it wouldn't make sense. First of all, why would it happen there? I could, you know, if it would have happened at some, you know, left-wing bastion of places. I don't see the patriots, the true patriots, the ones that are following Trump, the ones that are, you know, level-headed and level-minded. I don't see those kinds of people doing something like that. That first of all, the fact that they didn't want to hurt anybody, they had all these announcements going off that this thing was going to explode, leads me to believe that this case, that's not a terrorist act. First of all, that's not the act of a terrorist, because a terrorist doesn't do that. They're out to get as many bodies on the ground as they can, because they want to instill fear in the community. Now, this will instill fear in the community, but that wasn't their goal. And in fact, as far as we know, nobody died from this, other than it sounds to me like they found body parts at the scene of the bombing, and it sounds like, in my opinion, probably the driver and or whoever he had with him probably went with this thing. Could have been a she, I don't know, could have been, but it's probably a man. The creepy announcements that were put over this loudspeaker from the vehicle, warning people about the explosion that was about to happen, were apparently pre-recorded. It was a female, and there was like a countdown and there were announcements. Sounded like something you'd hear at an airport or some kind of weird, you know, recording. So that was going on. And then the thing just blows up at, I think it was right at 6:30 on the nose at the time. Here's what really concerns me about this whole thing. The more I hear about it, the more I realize this doesn't sound like a right-wing person, doesn't really sound even like a left-wing person. It's really hard to tell what this was about. It could have been someone with a grievance with someone in that area, or AT&T, because I understand AT&T went through some damage there. It seems like there would be easier ways to strike out at a company than to do that if you were a disgruntled employee. And there's books been written on this kind of stuff. So I don't understand the destruction of other people's personal property and that kind of thing. I don't understand that. But so this person was apparently, you know, had some mental problems. There's some real serious stuff going on there. And regardless of whether they were on the left or the right, they're wacko. Okay, they're out. There's something's wrong with them. I don't care if they were Antifa or who they were, or even a Muslim. That there's something wrong with somebody who wants to do that kind of thing. There's something mentally not connecting right. So you've got that issue going on. Here's the problem that I've got, and here's what really, really concerns me more than anything, is the chatter I'm hearing about the event. I'm hearing people say all kinds of crazy theories, speculations about the FBI did it, the ATF did it, BTAF did it, that it was an operation from the right or from the left, or that was somehow it destroyed evidence of voter fraud because it was all being stored there in that building. First of all, Tennessee's not one of the contested states at this point. There's I don't know that that would be none of these issues are really viable to me. Now, I could see if there was going to be, you know, there's some plausible ideas. There's some plausible thoughts here. If possibly there was a deep state organization that, you know, like CIA or FBI, whoever it would be, some kind of a covert operation where they had something going on, where they wanted to start something, where they wanted to do something that would cause people's opinion to crack, so they could crack down on certain other individuals. I saw this happen with the Michigan militia. I've never been a member of the Michigan militia. I do not live in Michigan. But I saw this back in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s. The Michigan militia became very popular. People were joining it like crazy. Even people out of state were joining it. And they were kind of the example of what a militia could be. And they were getting very popular among the prepper crowd, what you would now call the prepper crowd. Not pepper, prepper. So all of a sudden, there was a big sting operation where some guys from the Michigan militia were attempting to purchase some weapons, and there was an FBI sting involved in that whole thing, and that whole thing came crumbling down, and all of a sudden nobody wanted to be a part of it, and it became very stigmatized by that event because they were able to turn hearts and minds away from it. Now, if there is an uprising among the radical, in my opinion, radical Trump supporters, and they do something that's somehow violent, in my opinion, there are probably some elements within some of these organizations that want to see that within the FBI, that want to see that kind of thing happen because they want to crack down on everybody. That will give them a blank carte blanche permit, if you will, to go after everybody. Sort of like what happened on 9/11. Did the government do 9/11? I doubt it. But did they use it actually to do the whole Patriot Act and the Homeland Security thing and the TSA? All these bloated operations that came, you know, organizations that came into that whole thing because of it? Yes, absolutely. They absolutely used that because we knew at that time, of course, they kept telling us that we were afraid. The American people are afraid. Well, thanks for speaking my mind. I wasn't afraid, and I was an airline pilot at the time. So all of a sudden, they're telling me I'm afraid. It always gets me when I hear, this happens a lot more on the left than it does on the right. I hear it on both sides, but I hear the left coming out all the time saying what the American people think. Somebody will stand up in the House and say, the American people are scared of this, or they're afraid of this, or they can't afford this, or they can't. Thank you for speaking for me, but you're not speaking for me. We just sit there and think, well, I'm sitting here nice and cozy and I don't have any problems, but apparently everybody else out there is scared because I'm being told that everybody's scared. They don't know. They haven't been to their own home state and talked to a single soul that lives in their district for, you know, 10 years, but all of a sudden they know what everybody's thinking. Maybe they read it on Twitter. So you've got this kind of thing happening right now with this whole thing here in Nashville. And it in the midst of everything else that's going on, all of a sudden you've got all these theories of why this happened. And all I'm going to say is, let's wait for the results and see who gets involved. Take very close note of who's talking and why they're saying what they're saying. I'm saying there are going to be some nefarious actors in this whole thing. Probably some people who are going to try to usurp some authority or whatever they're going to try to do. Because of it, they're going to try to take advantage of whatever happened here to crack down. Well, now we got to go after the guns because some guy used an RV to blow. This happened right after the New York bombing. The New York Marathon. Right after that, they used pressure cookers to create these bombs that afterwards, all of a sudden, it was a gun issue. Well, we got to crack down on the guns. Should be cracking down on pressure cookers. Pressure cookers. I don't know what that even is. Pressure cookers. Should have oiled my mouth before I started here. So that's what we got going on with that. That took, you know, that took 15 minutes just to talk about that one subject. And what I'm saying is just, let's just calm down, see what happened there. You know, take what the authorities are saying with a word, with a grain of salt. I have no problem with that. I don't have a problem with people being skeptical of what they're saying. No problem with that at all. But let's not fly off the handle and start saying things that are not true. Like, oh, so-and-so was found there, and so-and-so was there, and they said this and that, and there's such-and-such happening there. Like, unless you know those things, don't start saying them, because then other people are going to take them and start spreading them. You know, the game, the telephone game, the telegraph game, where everybody, you know, starts, one person starts with one thing, and they say it to the next person, and by the time it gets to the 20th person, it's completely something different. And that's what's going on with this kind of stuff. So just settle down, be at peace, let's wait until we hear what's really going on. Now, I know that my influence, I don't have any delusions of grandeur. I know that there are very few people in the country that are going to hear this podcast, probably, unless everybody shares it. If you tell a friend and they tell two friends and then any two tell two friends, kind of like a multi-level marketing thing. But, you know, this is a place for me to just kind of, hopefully I reach one person and can assure one person and kind of, you know, at least resonate with someone and let them know that their opinions are valid as well. If they feel like we just need to wait, let's just wait before we start spreading this kind of thing around. Okay. So that's my thoughts on what happened in Nashville. And in the meantime, there's some weird politicking going on down there too, but that's beside the point. Let's talk about the stimulus bill, because it looked like this whole thing was going to go through. Now my understanding, this is what's weird. My understanding is this thing was basically put out almost 6,000 pages, and it's put out an hour before they're going to vote on it. It comes flying up. Everybody supposedly is in agreement to it. The $600 payments, now it's not just $600 to individuals that we're talking about here. This is $600 to individuals, and a married couple, I think, would be $1,200. The thing that you don't realize is that's not all the money that's going out. There's also funds going out to help small businesses. Now, there's two places that I think the government should put some money into, and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with being taxed, at least to some degree. There's other places they can collect taxes. I don't like direct taxes this way, but there are places they can put some taxes in and mess with the budget to pay people who are out of work for whatever reason, whether it's because the business that they were working for went broke, or the places that are businesses that have had to shut down because of the... Now, see, here's something that a lot of people don't realize. A business owner, small business owner, who hires people to work for them. Let's say I used to have a business. I had eight people working for me. There were not all those people were full-time, but there were some full-timers and some part-timers. Eight people worked for me. I did not take home a paycheck. I tried to for a little while. I just couldn't afford it. I was basically living on my wife's salary, and I did well. I mean, I was able to keep the company moving. It was a high cash flow business, a lot of overhead. So there was a lot of money moving through the company. I needed people to work for me because it was a labor intensive company. It was a service industry, but it was labor intensive. So it required a lot of money to keep the place going. And so I did all these things, kept it working, and didn't take home hardly anything for myself. The thing that most people don't realize is that when I had to shut that business down, because it finally just failed. I couldn't keep it going. The economy at one point, mid-90s, was pretty tough in that particular industry. It was pretty tough. I had to shut it down. I didn't get unemployment. I made sure that, now, I didn't lay anybody off in my company either. I made sure that they had a job. I just told them, hey, you might be able to start looking for another job because we're probably going to shut the place down. If you can't find another job, you'll get unemployment. I can lay you off, but I'm not going to, you know, I want to let you know right now, if you see another job that comes up or something else you want to do, jump on it, because the job here may not be around for much longer. And I was able to get everybody shuffled off into a job. In fact, the one guy went to a job, one of my right-hand men, he's in a job that he's been in ever since. He's been there for 20, almost 30 years now. Loves it. And so they were all able to move off into other positions. I was able to basically help everybody step off the without having to do anything with unemployment. I didn't get unemployment. Now, the whole time that they were working for me, I was paying for unemployment insurance. And the whole time that I was there, I was paying for their half of their federal income tax. Most people don't realize that. You might get $10 an hour, but the employer is paying 15. Well, here's an example. The minimum wage, and this is where the dirty little secret is within this whole national minimum wage thing is. They want a $15 living wage for everybody. Well, minimum wage. That $15 isn't going to be much out on the West Coast. If you're living in LA, $15 an hour is not enough to live on. In Indiana, where I live, in the area where I'm at, that's pretty good pay. Because the cost of living here is like a third what it is out there. So it's just to have a uniform thing like that is ridiculous. And then the other side of it is, the employer is paying $20 an hour, at least in Indiana. That's what you're going to pay. If you have somebody working for you for $15 an hour, you're going to be paying out $20 an hour just in their pay and in the additional taxes. And that doesn't include their benefits, their insurance, anything else that you're paying for on top of that. Anything that you put into that employee training, what anything else, none of that counts towards that $20 an hour. So the employee never sees that. The employee just thinks, oh, the company, boss makes a dollar, I make a dime. That's why I pee on company time. So that's what happens with all that. So getting back to the stimulus/COVID relief fund, the businesses are the ones really suffering. The businesses that the states told them to shut down. And then there's some industries. There are some industries like the travel industry. I think I've mentioned this before. They're the ones that are hurting. If we could pay those people and pay the people who are out of work and help with those programs, I'm more for that. What I'm not for is shuffling in this little $600 payment, one-time payment. Now, here's Rand Paul's, I pretty much agree with a lot of things he said, but he kind of went off the deep end on this one. He basically said, well, why don't we just give everybody, $1 million, or why don't we give everybody $20,000, or, why don't we just, this is the beginning of a guaranteed income. You know, he took it off the deep end. And it is, in a sense, I get where he's going from. It's like, he has a point, but here's my point. This is a one-time payment. This isn't an ongoing thing, and it's an international event in which there is major problems, and we need to do something to monetize this. To try to help people a little bit. It's not going to help people much. But we need to do something. This is what, government should be there with this safety net for this particular purpose for a short period of time. It's a one-time deal because it is going to mess with the monetary system, and it's going to mess with the value of our dollar. So we need to be very careful with this and not just go on doing this. But that's what some people are arguing. Well, we could just keep doing this. No, we can't keep doing this. At some point, this is going to kind of push everybody back. It's just kicking the can down the road. At some point, people are going to be hurting. The economy is going to be hurting because of this. We need somebody that can come in with a strong economic plan to keep us from crashing the plane here, if so to speak, if we do this kind of thing. So that's where I differ with Rand on this, is that it's this is a one-time thing. I get where I appreciate his sentiment about it, but we really need to look at getting some funds to people who have no choice of their own. This isn't mistakes that they made or choices that they made that were wrong. This is just where the government has come in and basically said, we're shutting this down. You have to shut this down. And they had no choice. And they're going to be fined ridiculous amounts of money if they didn't shut it down, which is, I just think, is criminal, in my opinion. So that's my thoughts on that. And along with that, let's talk a little bit about the insurrection. Let's get more into the whole election issue. What is going to happen on January 6th? and what is happening right now with the election process. One other thing, before I go that far, one other thing I'd like to float here, this idea, because, oh, this goes into a whole other can of worms, but yeah, I'm going to go down this road. So this thing came out, 1 hour later, they had to vote on it, and Republicans voted on it. Everybody went through the House, went through the Senate, it looked like it was going to pass, and then Trump basically throws a monkey wrench into it and says, nope, got to have $2,000, and some of these things are ridiculous that you're spending money on. And basically what he's saying is, cut out some of the spending so we can afford to give people $2,000. He didn't want to necessarily cost any more, this $900 billion, which is only going to end up being $2 trillion. But he ended up, he basically said, no, you're going to pay people more, give more people this money than we're going to be giving money out to counting fish and doing things over in other countries. And Egypt's going to spend the money on buying things from Russia and all this other stuff that's going on. Here is my opinion on this stuff. Now, this happens so often after every election, around every election time. Ever since I can remember, the only time that I remember this happening was Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton started this. Right after the election, he wanted to do a stimulus package. And the stimulus package, I think back at that time, was in 92. It would have been in 93, actually, when it passed. He, right away, as soon as the election was over, within a month, he was saying, we need a stimulus package to get the country back on track, because there wasn't a slowed down economy back in right around the late 80s, early 90s. People forget about that. It was H.W. Bush's issues with the economy. Reagan did a good job with the economy and would have continued to bring us through things. It was H.W. that wrecked it, did not carry it on and keep it going. And I still believe trickle down had a viable place in our economic structure, but HW did not manage it well. Neither did George, but that's beside the point. So Clinton comes out with this stimulus package right away, and I think it was $700 billion, I think. I'm pretty sure it was $700 billion. Maybe not. Maybe it was $700 million, but nowadays they use billion instead of million. It's just been so ridiculously changed. But he was the first one that came out with this, and if you track down that money, a lot of that money was for things that paid back people who donated. There are connections you can make to people who were big donors during the campaign. They're paying back people for the campaign contributions and paying back people. They're paying back favors. Shovel Ready, that was another one. Shovel Ready, right after the election. Shovel Ready projects. Well, I guess Shovel Ready wasn't quite as shovel ready as I thought. But there was a lot of money being paid out into supposedly shovel-ready infrastructure projects that nobody even knows where the money went. They don't even know. They won't admit to where it went. Stuff like that. I think that this is another one of those deals where the left wanted to put together a big package like this, and a lot of this money that's going out there is going to foreign countries. Who knows where it's going in those foreign countries? Because there's been a lot of aid go to Iraq that's disappeared and has found its way back to other organizations. So this, in my opinion, is money laundering. And it's probably going back into the coffers of people who are not even friendly to our republic. So that's how these things get funded. And it's just, it blows my mind. And so this is just a theory I have. And again, you can accuse me of being a conspiracy theory guy. I'm wearing my tinfoil hat right now. So that's my opinion. I think a lot of these funds that are going out there being spent in weird, ridiculous ways for something that's, you know, that they have this lollipop and candy bar bill that they'll pass, and it has nothing to do with lollipops and candy bars. You know, that's, they'll give 10% of it is about lollipops and candy bars, and the other 90% is about funding something that's completely, you know, nobody even knows about. So it's just, that's the kind of stuff that they do all the time. And it's very aggravating. That's why their approval rating is about 3% or something, I think, for Congress. It's ridiculous. So that's really all I wanted to say more about that, about the whole issue with the stimulus/COVID relief fund, because I think it's just, it's something we really need to have a little more accountability on. My opinion. So there you go. Sidney Powell apparently sat down with Michael Flynn and the guy from, There's a couple other people in the room, I guess. It has apparently come out that she has been assigned as special counsel. And supposedly, President Trump directly told her that she would be special counsel. He was assigning her at that moment special counsel to look into the election, and that she would get security clearance and all this kind of stuff. But nobody around in the room at the time wanted to give her any papers or sign any papers, do anything about it. They just basically said, "Oh, you can just assign it and it's done." Well, she has to have some kind of, security clearance. She has to have all these different things. There has to be some kind of, obvious something. So I don't know. I don't understand. Now, apparently since then, she's basically said that since she left the White House, now she has not been able to get access to the president again. Is that just weird or what? That's just weird. There's weird stuff going on around the president right now. Now, there's some other people who are saying that Pence is somehow not on the president's side on this, that he's going to cave, that he's a turncoat. I have not heard anything specifically from Pence that suggests that. Now, I know that Pence may give in. He might. He was a governor here in Indiana for a long time, and I thought he did an excellent job as governor. He didn't do everything the way I would have done it, but he's kind of the real deal. And there's very few people the president can talk to without anybody else in the room, without anybody taking record of it. The VP is one person he can talk to without anybody in the room, and there's no record of it. They are kind of like brothers. And it's a very touchy situation. I'm hearing people though that they're really like saying that Pence is a crook, and I don't know where they're getting that information or how you go about, I don't know. It's to me that seems a little bit too far. I just don't see it. So I'm not sure exactly where they're getting that kind of thing. So that's a bit concerning to me, in fact, a little bit. Now, I think he's going to come through. There's some things. Let's talk about January 6th, because Pence plays right into that. January 6th is the day where Congress gets together and they put their final approval or seal on the electoral vote. So the vice president presides. He's the president of the Senate. So what happens on that day is that the Senate meets, the Congress also meets. There's a joint meeting at that time. And they approve of the vote at that time, the electoral vote. If they do not, in other words, if there are objectors to that, they can have a committee hearing of 2 hours per objection, and there sounds like there's going to be at least a few. And of course, now in the midst of all this, you've got two people that are playing out in this whole thing. One is Mitch McConnell, the other is Mike Pence, Vice President Pence. Mitch McConnell, I would not trust for a moment on this particular issue. He's made some mumblings about the issue of, he's basically told the guys in the people in the Senate, basically said he doesn't want any foolish activity. He doesn't want any, I can't remember what he said. It wasn't hanky-panky. It might have been hanky-panky. He didn't say shenanigans. He basically said doesn't want anything, anybody to go against anything, change anything. Because he's basically saying it's done. It's a done deal. It's over with. I'm good friends with Joe. I worked with him in the Senate. I think we can work with him, whatever. McConnell needs to retire. McConnell's done. Now, in my opinion, at this point, he can retire. The problem with this whole thing now is McConnell has gone very silent, other than to say that to the senators. He basically said, don't do it. McConnell has a lot of power. McConnell has a lot of fundraising control This is the Speaker always does this. The Speaker of the House, back when Boehner was in control of the House, people were voting him in because he had a lot of control over the purse strings that were involved in fundraising for elections. Same thing goes with Mitch McConnell. Huge amount of fundraising power. He can direct a lot of funds, got a lot of people in his pocket. So he can do that. He can put a lot of pressure. Plus, there's the other side of it is committees. He can assign people to committees. And he's very influential in that respect. And if people want to be on a particular committee, and believe me, there's all kinds of reasons why people want to be on these committees, because they may say that they're serving on a committee. Well, they get extra funds for that. They do get paid more. It's usually not in direct pay for that kind of thing. They get an expense account for managing those things, for being a part of those things. Don't think for a minute that, you know, their $250,000 a year salary doesn't go up when they don't, you know, they're just going to be a part of a committee where they got to have more meetings and more expenses and more travel involved, and they're not getting paid for and reimbursed and getting some kind of stipend for those kinds of things. Absolutely, they get better pay for those. Plus, they get it on their resume, you know, for their, you know, they get more power, more influence. Their stock portfolio is more, you know, they can be on the inside of things for stock portfolios, even though they say they aren't. I mean, it's just a whole myriad. You know, why else would anybody serve on one of those committees if they didn't have, you know, some kind of compensation somewhere along the line, rather than just a feel good, you know, position that they're going to be involved in? So that's a big deal for some of these people. It's a big deal. And basically, what he's saying is, well, no, you're not going to be in this. You're not going to be in this on this committee. I'd say, you know, that's fine. Go, you know, go suck up some cement. I don't know. It's whatever. Mitch, that's not what, you know, you're there to represent people. If I was in Senate, I would just basically say, you're not going to have that kind of influence over me. In fact, I think it's kind of evil, and I'm not going to play that game with you. So, there's a couple guys that are basically saying that. There's a few in the House that are definitely saying it. There are a couple of that are in the Senate that are not coming out and saying it, but they're everything but that. Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, I'm really curious as to where they stand on some of these things. And I have the feeling they may not be saying it now because they know better than to show their hand there, but they're playing their hand very close to the vest. And I really think that there's going to be quite a few senators that are going to come out against this thing. And they don't, first of all, they know that Mitch McConnell probably isn't going to last another term. The guy's getting old. Of course, I've thought Nancy Pelosi was going to die before 10 years ago, but she's holding on still. You know, I guess the alcohol preserves are pretty good, whatever else kind of pills she's taking. But so that's kind of where I'm at with that whole thing. So you got Mike Pence and Mitch McConnell, who have not necessarily been friends. And I don't think that there's anything there going on that's going to be an underhanded act. However, there is this whole thing of all they have to do, they don't even have to decide that, you know, flip the electors, because there are contesting electors on this thing, provisional electors or contesting electors. So if they were to just knock a couple of states out and say, we're not going to accept because there's too much controversy, there's too much, there's not enough confidence in those particular states that their elections were done correctly, or they could even step in and just say, because they did, they broke the rules and did things unconstitutionally, which they did. Several of them, the governors took over and decided on their, they basically became dictators and decided that they were going to decide the election rules. And their state legislatures had that authority and they took it away from them. The governors took it away, which is just completely unconstitutional, which is what the whole Texas case was about. But it was thrown out, basically. It wasn't listened to. So that's where we're at with this thing. And the whole thing now could basically just be, well, we're not going to insert the provisional electors, but we are going to take away, we're not going to approve the electors for Biden, which takes him down below 270. Once you're down below 270, now it becomes a state vote. Now, the only other issue with this is that for a brief period of time, if this goes past January 20th, Nancy Pelosi, or the Speaker of the House, whoever that may be at that time, becomes the president, steps in as POTUS for, even if it's just for a few days. which could be enough to do something really crazy. So, yeah, that could be real interesting. But if it, you know, if they get it all done before that, get the, now what happens is it goes back to us to a vote with the state. The state, it's a state vote. So it would go back to the legislature, which I think there's a little over 30 states that are actually run by, that are considered Republican states. So chances are, if it goes back to the House, would then vote for the president, and the Senate would vote for the vice president. You could end up with Kamala Harris as the vice president and Trump as the president. Wouldn't that be fun? So that, I mean, that's, it was a crazy, it's a crazy scenario, but I doubt if that would ever happen, because I think the Senate's probably going to vote for Pence. They know him too well. So it's one of those things where this could happen, and it could, you know, this is going to make their heads pop off if this ends up happening. But it's at my opinion, this is probably the most likely thing that's going to happen at this point. I think that the most likely thing. Now, in the midst of all this as well, Giuliani, as I said, he came up with this whole statement that things are going to explode. You know, there's going to be all kinds of big evidence coming out after Christmas. Well, I got news for you, Mr. Giuliani, Mayor. I've seen enough evidence that, in my opinion, is explosive enough. You don't have to show me any more evidence to know that this whole thing was done. I don't know what more you're going to show other than somebody literally having, you know, all this stuff on some kind of confessions from some people at Dominion. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen there, but all I can tell you is you can have all the evidence in the world, and if they don't listen to it, or if they just simply choose to say it's been debunked, or that the media will not, you know, I doubt right now. I just don't know if you can get a hearing, a counsel, anybody to listen to this stuff. And it's staring them right in the face. This is what gets me. It stares them right in the face, and they turn around and say, "Oh no, that's okay. No, that wasn't what it looks like. No, that video, that's not what it looks like. No, that eyewitness, no, they're lying. No, they're testifying under oath, but that's not, there's no evidence." Here's a little known fact, and this is something I've been telling everybody. Sworn eyewitness testimony under an affidavit is something, by definition in law, it's called direct evidence. It's not hearsay. It's not exculpatory evidence. It is absolutely direct evidence. An eyewitness is direct evidence. And they've got multiple eyewitnesses to most of these events that people are swearing to. In this case, especially when you have more than one eyewitness, now we're talking huge issues with this stuff, because this is direct evidence. I mean, if somebody sees someone murder someone, that's a pretty big deal. You've got an eyewitness on the scene. Now, if the forensics and everything don't pan out and it shows somebody else was there and say, all, you know, there's no other evidence at all, then yeah, you got an issue. The problem here is we also have something, a different kind of evidence. I'm going to try to look it up here real quick because I've got it here somewhere. It's a type of evidence. You've got circumstantial, testimonial evidence. There is an expert witness evidence, that type of thing, or testimonial evidence. Both of those are kind of the same. It's kind of a blend of what we're talking about here. When we're talking about anomalies within the evidence itself, in other words, the basics of, you know, you got numbers that just don't add up. The one guy basically said, for Biden to have won, to have underperformed Hillary Clinton in some ridiculous number of counties all over the place, and then to only have outperformed in these specific counties and only and like way overperformed in those counties to the point where he outperformed even Barack Obama in 08. And then you've got Trump gaining voters from what he did in 2016. And you have the 16 bellwether counties that Trump, or was it 19? Only one of the bellwether counties that always go towards if he had 19 of them and 18 of them voted for Trump. That's way more than normally happen when the president, when the person gets the presidency. Ohio, there's a couple states that are bellwether states. And there's the whole coattail issue of how in the world did the Republicans gain seats in the House, not expected at all, according to the left. They gained seats in the House. They were able to almost hold the Senate and probably actually did. Probably should have gained seats in the Senate. Because they were on the coattails of the president. However, the president wasn't apparently wearing a coat because he lost. This has never happened. The guy that did all the numbers, basically ran all these numbers and said, the odds of this happening are 1 quintillion or something to 1 or something. It's ridiculous amount of the odds in this anomaly are ridiculous for all these things to be put together. Now, interesting thing what he said was, if he used to work for an insurance company and they used to run numbers like this to find fraud, insurance fraud. He said, if this was an insurance industry, an insurance case, there would be a major investigation launched into this because of the anomaly. It would just be just because of that anomaly alone. Any one of these anomalies, he listed like 4 or 5 of them. Any one of these would launch an entire, like, all-out investigation into what was going on because it was such an anomalous event. And that's what we've got here. We've got an event that was so ridiculous, and there's 4 or 5 of these events that compound on each other. In other words, to have this one happen with that one at the same time as well, and then to have it happen in different states, he said it's astronomical, the amount of improbability that has happened here. And if you spend the time, there's about an hour and a half it takes to go through, he goes through all these numbers, and if you take notes and kind of go back over what he's saying, you can't walk away from it and not believe it. It's because the numbers just don't lie. The numbers are there, and he's going by actual factual numbers. Now, there's also another video out there I'd like to throw a plug in for. It's called Who Stole the Election? I think it's done by Josh Phillips. He's with Epoch Times. Epic, whatever you want to call it. And he goes through this whole thing. It's an hour and 20-some minutes long. About 45 minutes into it, he really starts nailing things down. It starts pulling all the pieces together and connecting all the dots. And I'll tell you what, you realize that this country is under attack. And we are, there are forces from without and from within that are manipulating what are going on. And it's not, I'm not talking, you know, goofy, crazy tinfoil stuff hat here. I'm talking documented evidence of what's happening, especially with the Communist Party, Chinese Communist Party. It is, folks, we better wake up to this, what's going on, because there's, it's a multifaceted attack on our country. There's no real battle lines being drawn at this point. It is just simply a very serious time. So, you know, Merry Christmas. Middle of all that. So I've said all of that to say this. We are at a very pivotal time in our history. The week ahead, in my opinion, is going to be a very, very important one. And I think we need to pay attention to what's going on around us. I wouldn't doubt that there will be some kind of interference with false flagging and whatever is going to happen, you know, this, whatever kind of events happen to take place. There are also going to be some crazy people out there that do some things that play into the hand of the FBI and the organizations that want to set things up, want to make Trump look bad, whatever. They want to destroy the support of the hearts and minds of the people. However, I don't think they've ever seen anything like this before in terms of Trump supporters and the amount of dedication and commitment they have to this guy. Because they realize, you know, he's not, in my opinion, he's not the perfect guy. He's not a god, but he's certainly, in my opinion, he's God's anointed right now. And we'll see if that's all plays out, how it all plays out. But in my opinion, if we let this election go by and don't do anything about it, then that's the end of elections in our country from now on. I'm not going to count on them. I probably won't even vote. Why? You know, I'm going to let my representatives know. You know, they haven't lost my vote. They've negated my vote. They've made my vote worthless. So if they, you know, they can spend all the money they want to on their campaign, I'm not going to, doesn't matter. Because it's just, they've told me by doing nothing, they've told me that my vote doesn't matter. So good luck being elected again. And because, you know, whatever. Now, people are also talking about Trump coming back in 2024. What's going to be different then? How are you going to win an election then if you're not even in a position to, you know, you're the underdog at that point. You know, they got all the control and they control all the everything else. They do anyway now. So even in the position where he's in, how is he supposed to win against somebody that's, and now he's going against an incumbent again, and it's not going to happen. Not going to happen. So, yeah. Interesting times in which we live. Once again, thank you for subscribing. For liking this, for commenting. There'll be some reports coming out. I'll definitely let you know what day we're going to have the guest appearance of the special guest we're going to have next week. Should be interesting. We're going to talk about all these things and more, anything that happens between now and then. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about Rush Limbaugh. Hopefully we'll have another show with Rush after the new year. I'm hoping that Christmas Eve wasn't his last show. But we'll see what happens there. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Thank you all for being a part of this podcast.